Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to Blog Talk Radio, today's You Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester. We're going to be talking about a lot of SEC storylines on the college football side today. Also, some recruiting and transfer storylines on the college basketball side. Going to kick things off with college football and Stephen Sheehan on the line. Hey, Stephen, how's it going?
Doing great, Colin. Thanks for having me on.
Sure thing. So, Stephen, I know you're a big Florida Gators fan. You're there in Florida, do a good bit of writing on both the Gators and all of the SEC. It's really interesting time with Jim McElwain coming on board. And it's tough a lot of times in the first year to know what the expectations should be. In your mind, what's the, I guess, over-under on the Florida Gators season this coming year?
I think Gators fans expect somewhere between 5 and 6 wins, to be honest. I don't think there's a lot to be excited about, especially offensively. You know, Jim McElwain had a lot of success at Colorado State and at Alabama with some quarterbacks, but between Treyon Harris and Will Grier, they're pretty much two big question marks. Jeff Driscoll, a fifth-year senior, ended up turning to Louisiana Tech, and that might actually be addition by subtraction. The only real pieces they got on offense that are established to some degree, DeMarcus Robinson, wide receiver, and Kelvin Taylor steps into that number one running back role with Matt Jones gone. Other than that, the offensive line is completely overhauled. They lost all 5 starters, plus Roger Johnson, who was projected to be their starting left tackle, ended up retiring this offseason, walking away from the game with, I believe it was a spinal injury. So the offensive side of the ball is a complete, but that's the reason why they brought Jim McElwain in here. So I think it's going to be obviously more than a 1-year turnaround. Luckily, the defense should still be strong with third guard base anchoring a secondary that should be among the nation's best. Defensive line has some young pieces, and they have Antonio Morris as second linebacker. But overall, I would say 5 to 6 wins is right around where I project the Gators to be this year, which obviously Gator Nation would be happier with something better, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they could go to a bowl in McElwain's first season. We'll see if that can happen, especially with how much they lost. Definitely an opportunity for some freshmen to play quickly. We also have Jason Hall on the line, who's another SEC football writer. Hey, Jason, how's it going?
Going well. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. We were just trying to figure out what the Florida Gators are going to look like this season, whether or not a bowl game should be an expectation there. It seems like they will have a lot of young players in the rotation. You've had an interesting series, Jason, the past couple weeks on SEC Impact Freshmen. In your mind, who are some of the biggest names and guys who are going to be stars even as freshmen this year in the SEC?
Well, I think sticking with Florida, the obvious choice is Martez Ivey, the number one offensive lineman prospect in the country and a 5-star. I think he's going to have to fill a role with the entire Florida line looking to be replaced in 2016. Trent Thompson on the other side of the ball, the nation's top player and defensive tackle, going to Georgia. And, of course, Khalil McKenzie, second-generation Tennessee volunteer. He's one of the few guys in that class that didn't enroll early, but the thing is he's pretty much set to play at the college level. He dominated the Nike opening last summer, and he was the top lineman there. So I think he's going to be one of those guys that makes an impact. Tennessee's looking to replace its starting defensive tackle, Jordan Williams. So I think him and Shai Tuttle both will play an impact. And, you know, it's the SEC, so a lot of skill players. Byron Cowart's another guy, the strong side defensive end for Auburn. And, you know, with Will Muschamp coming in as a defensive coordinator, I think there's going to be a lot of improvement on the Auburn defense. So if he can come in and fill that outside linebacker pass rusher role, I think he can make an impact as well.
Yeah, we've seen pretty big impacts recently by freshmen across the nation, but you even saw in the SEC with a guy like Johnny Manziel win the Heisman. Also, James Winston, you know, these freshmen or redshirt freshmen having big years. Steven, is there anybody in the SEC in your mind who could contend for a Heisman Trophy or a national trophy? I'm talking about the Maxwell Award or something like that as well. Is there anybody in the SEC who could do that this year, whether it's a true freshman or a redshirt freshman in your mind, or are the leaders on these teams, the stars, really going to be upperclassmen?
At the quarterback position, I think it's tough, and there's a lot of transition this year. I think a young guy, if you just go for a young guy, so I think it's going to be a breakout star. I think it's going to be Josh Dobbs, quarterback at Tennessee. I think that's a team that obviously we all look forward to seeing this year, possibly contending for the SEC crowd. He's kind of got some kind of feet left last year, and now he should be taking over as a full-time starter. He has a lot of weapons around him, and I think he's a guy that's going to be looking for a breakout year. Other than that, I think most of the talent falls on the defensive side, and especially with the veterans, it's just really tough for the SEC quarterback to kind of come in and make an impact right away, unless you're kind of a hybrid guy like Manziel. I think Tennessee is the type of athlete who can do a lot on the ground and through the air, and he has a lot of good weapons to throw the ball to.
You mentioned Josh Dobbs, who it seems like everybody agrees that he could be one of the stars this year in the SEC. Jason, in your mind, is there anything holding him back from that? The reason I bring that up is because the biggest question for Tennessee for me last year was, why isn't Josh Dobbs playing sooner? Why isn't he the starter already? Are there holdups on that end that you think could prevent him from being a star, or is it pretty much his show? He's going to be what everyone says he's going to be in 2015.
Yeah, for every indication that I heard, Justin Worley just improved and showed maturity off the field. It was his last season. He was a senior, and to me, he was the best passer as far as accuracy going into the year. I think Joshua Dobbs was always the better fit for Mike Bajikian's offense, with the spread offense and the attack and the up-tempo pace. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that would hold him back is the offensive line, and that's not an individual trait for him, but I know Butch Jones keeps saying that he has to improve in certain areas, like his accuracy and just, I guess, decision-making, just different things. And I think it's just to keep him humble and to keep the expectations, you know, reasonable. But I agree with Steven. I think Joshua Dobbs is poised for a breakout year. He's one of the few quarterbacks that has that star power, aside from maybe Dak Prescott and Jeremy Johnson at Auburn. Similar situation to Dobbs, where small sample size, but impressive nonetheless. And, you know, like you said, you've got Jalen Hurd back there, you've got Alvin Kamara. They're very capable of having three guys rush for over 800 yards this season. So it might be one of the best backfields in the country.
So we did the over-under on Florida. Steven, I'll ask you, what's the over-under for Tennessee? Knowing that's kind of a tough question because the potential is so high, clearly, with all the young talent they have there. But it remains that there's not a lot of veteran leadership there, or that could be a question. What's your over-under for Tennessee this year?
I think somewhere around the 8-9 win mark is definitely possible. I mean, I'm really high on this team. I think that would actually be sort of on the low side, the 8-win season. Look at the schedule. It's not too difficult. Probably their hardest game is going to be a road game at Alabama. They also go and have to play the Gators in the Swamp. And even if the Gators aren't up to their normal standard, that's always a tough place to play. I think the best-case scenario is in the SEC East. I don't really see a lot of improvement from the other schools in the division. Whether it's Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, those three powerhouses have kind of taken a step back. You know, Georgia does have talent in the backfield, but we have to break in a new quarterback. And I think it all comes down to Dobbs, who we've already spoken about. Him and that young nucleus on offense, can they step up and kind of take on those leadership roles, become more consistent? Because I think on the other side of the ball, they have a lot of talent, especially on the edges. Curtis Majid, Derek Barnett, probably the best pass rushing duo in the country. Derek Barnett was an absolute stud as a freshman. He's one of those guys that got to see a lot of playing time under Butch Jones in his first year on campus, so you have to expect him to take another step forward. So I think Tennessee is definitely that's going to fight for the SEC title. But, of course, that's on paper, and we know things can change here to now. But I'm pretty high on Tennessee, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're in the SEC.
Yeah, you said the best-case scenario is an SEC East title, and if you're in the title game, anybody has a chance to win there. Jason, in your mind, in order to reach that best-case scenario, what has to happen? What pieces have to fall into place in order for Tennessee to reach its potential?
I mean, the offensive line has to improve. You can't have the worst offensive line in the SEC. Tennessee ranked last in tackles for loss allowed and sacks allowed, and that's just unacceptable. Like Steven said, there's a young nucleus. You have Jalen Hurd. You have Marquez North. You have Josh Malone and all this five-star, four-star talent, Derek Barnett and Kirk Majette, the best pass rush duo in the SEC returning, Cam Sutton, one of the most underrated defensive backs. You have a complete team at the skill positions, and you have a potential star in the making in Dobbs. It really all boils down to that offensive line, and you know, it's the SEC. You have some pass rushers that are the best in the country, some of the best linebackers in the country, and you can't have Dobbs go on the ground, so... For me, for Tennessee to reach its full potential, it has to win battles in the trenches.
Yeah, it seems to often come down to the trenches, especially with a young team like that. We'll end the college football segment with a couple extra points just to get your quick opinions. What's one team in the SEC that will exceed expectations? It's easy to say a team like Auburn will have a great year. A lot of people see them doing pretty well. You can definitely pick Auburn if you like, and they'll win a national title hands down. But, Steven, in your mind, what's one team that's not getting its due, at least leading up to the season right now?
Well, I think the University of Georgia definitely is a team that you have to look out for. You know, Mark Richt's been pretty consistent as far as his win totals, but they haven't quite been able to get over the hump. Georgia top is obviously a big blow, but like I said, Miguel is just a passion behind him. Plus, you got Nick Dubb. I mean, those are two absolute stud running backs. They brought in Trent Compton at defensive tackle, like Dustin said, and I think they're a team that's poised to still have a very strong core nucleus. They got Leonard Floyd, Jordan Jenkins, our linebacker. Both of those guys came back to school, even though they could have declared for the draft. I think they got a lot of studs up front, and that backfield is going to be hard to contend with. Malcolm Mitchell, also our wide, that people kind of forgot about him with injuries the past few seasons, but that's a former five-star recruit who still has another year to prove that he's NFL capable. So I think the University of Georgia is a team that we're kind of sleeping on, because they have some guys that are really highly talented, former high recruits, that now it's on them to kind of step up in their senior seasons or, you know, their second or third years as starters. So I think Georgia is definitely a team that we need to start paying attention to.
Yeah, I agree that Bryce Ramsey is a guy, if he can lock down that starting job, his potential is pretty high, and he could be somebody who has a great first year as a starter. Jason, who are you thinking needs to get their due leading up to the season in the SEC? Who's not getting enough attention?
I think it's Texas A&M in the SEC West. I think everybody's saying that Kyle Allen has the potential to be an all-SEC quarterback, and they have one of the best receiving cores in the SEC, if not the country. Like you said, that young talent at Tennessee, young talent, Ricky Seals-Jones, Speedy Noyle, all those guys, and, you know, I think the addition of John Chavis is definitely going to help the defense. A poor showing in 2014, but I think this is one of the years that Kevin Sumlin reminds some of these fans that, you know, built him up to be the next great coach in the SEC, why he had that prestige after his first season, and, you know, can prove that he can do it without the likes of a Johnny Manziel or that once-in-a-lifetime talent. So I think the Aggies could be a team that potentially upsets some of the favorites like the Alabamas or the Auburns, and it makes a surprise run toward the end of the season.
Yeah, they definitely have that that history of upsetting Alabama, so a lot of people would love to see that again this year. Thank you guys for joining today. You can read Jason and Steven's stuff multiple times a week on Today's You and follow them on Twitter. Jason is at JasonHallFSN, and Steven is at Steven P. Sheehan. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Colin.
Thank you.
All right, let's move over to the basketball side and get Andrew Beverly and Bobby Reagan on. Hey, guys, how's it going? It looks like we lost Bev for a second there. We'll start with you, Bobby. Bobby, you had a really interesting article on Kentucky last week, I believe, talking about how they're sort of getting overlooked. A good, not overlooked. I mean, this is a team that'll probably be in the top five, perhaps in the preseason rankings. But they're not considered one of the favorites, really, or at the top going into next season. Is this just a case where Kentucky lost a ton of players, so no one wants to put them at the top, or will they be right back up there based on the talent coming in?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's probably the most depressed-sounding fan base or talked-about team that's a top-five team outside of me talking about Virginia last year. But they have still, what, five McDonald's All-Americans coming in or on the team next year. They're still going to be 7-8 deep. I think people just are not sure what to expect because you hear the losses of Karl Anthony Towns, a Willie Cauley Stein, a Devin Booker, Trey Lyles, the Harrison twins. So it's just more the unknown. But when you look at what they have as a team, they're set up quite well. They remind me a lot of Calipari's second team, which was the Brandon Knight, Deron Lamb, Terrence Jones team. Winning 30-plus games in a one seed should not surprise anybody.
Yeah, I feel like that basically the expectation every year at Kentucky. We also have Andrew Beverly back on now. Hey, Bev, how's it going?
Hey, doing well. How are y'all?
Doing pretty well. Just trying to figure out why the entire nation is down on Kentucky so far this offseason, it seems like, when they'll probably be a top-five team heading into the preseason next year. In your mind, though, Bev, could it be better for Kentucky that there aren't these incredible expectations on this team, and maybe they're the team that can go to the Final Four and maybe even win it because there's not this constant pressure? And there's always pressure Kentucky, but there's not an undefeated type pressure. Could it be better for this team, or could they in the tournament maybe even do better than the undefeated Kentucky team?
I mean, you know, it's ridiculous that nobody is talking about them because, I mean, it's not like they have this bad recruiting class coming in. They have Isaiah Briscoe and Scal Labissiere. Is that how you say it? I always screw that up. But,
I'll defer to Bobby on that pronunciation.
Yeah. What? And, I mean,
Scal Labissiere, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got those guys coming in. You got Tyler Ulis coming back. You got Alex Poitras coming back. I mean, the team is going to be really, 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 really good. Do I think they can win a national title? I mean, yeah, I definitely think they could. I don't think they're going to be, you know, number one or two. I don't think they're going to be the best or second best team. But I definitely can see them winning. I mean, easily.
Yeah.
I don't know why people are down on them.
Yeah, once you're in the top five, and if there's not a truly dominant team, anybody can win it. I'm sure Kentucky's included in that, especially when John Calipari is the coach. One team that definitely it seems like has had a tough offseason so far, especially in recruiting, is Virginia. I know, Bev, that hurts because you're a Cavaliers fan. Virginia has some great recruits coming in, but they did have Sacha Kilia-Jones decommit. Then they lost sort of a recruiting battle with UNC. As a Virginia fan, is this a concern for you, Bev, or are you just, hey, you win some, you lose some, we'll be fine?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a concern in the way that you know, Sacha Jones is really, 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 really shot up recruiting rankings. And for good reason. I mean, he's 6'10", can step out, hit the long ball. The only real thing he really needs to add to his game is strength. I mean, I've watched him like 20 times because he plays in my hometown, plays at the high school I went to. And losing Kenny Williams, a lot of people think that was a big loss. But I mean, he was really a heavy UNC lean coming out of high school. So it's not that shocking that he ended up going to Carolina. It's kind of shocking in the way it happened because he announced his commitment to North Carolina as leaving UVA after supposedly having a great visit. I don't think it has anything to do with, like, lack of postseason success. I don't really think that's the reason they're losing these recruits. They're going to bring in good guys, and they'll be fine. Do I think they need to change the way they play in the postseason? I do, but that's a different topic for another day. Or if we want to do that today, we can do that today.
It's not just the postseason. Who can Tony Bennett sit there and say, hey, look at my guy in the NBA? I mean, he might be able to do that with Justin Anderson, but are you really raving about Mike Scott? A lot of other teams can go to the team and recruit and say, look what I did for player XYZ. I got them to hear.
Well, I don't really think that's fair because this is UVA, and he's only been there for, what, 5 years? I mean, he's finally bringing in good recruits to the ACC. What was that?
It is hard to get NBA talent to the ACC.
Oh, it's UVA, and he's been there for 5 years, dude. This isn't like he inherited a program at Duke or Carolina. You know, I mean, you got to build that up. I mean, he came from Washington State.
Right, but it's been 5 years. At what point do you say, okay, like I said, he might be able to do it with Justin Anderson, but at some point that needs to change. You need to send that NBA talent in there.
Dude, he's had, like, one legitimate recruiting class that's gone all the way through. I mean, I just don't think that's a valid argument at all. Like, I mean, Joe Harris, who was drafted last year, was the first member of his recruiting class, you know, to graduate and go to the NBA. Like, he was, like, I mean, like, Mike Scott wasn't a Tony Bennett guy. And he's doing fine. He's getting valuable minutes on one of the five best teams in the NBA. Arguably one of the five best
Virginia,
teams in the NBA.
With no postseason
and I thought he was
going to
be terrible in the NBA.
But for Virginia, where they don't have any postseason success and they don't have any NBA talent, they need to change one of the two. If you're sitting as a recruit, if you're coming to me and saying, you know, hey, come here and play tough defense and slow-paced offense with minimal success in the postseason – and maybe a shot at getting drafted, that doesn't do it for those top recruits. Something has to change. That's the concern. So one of the two things has to change for Virginia. To me, they've peaked.
Yeah, I mean, getting higher profile recruits would help. I mean, he's trying to build to that. He's trying to do that. I mean, you can't expect three-star guys coming out of high school to be stars in the NBA. It's not like Calipari at Kentucky who just brings in top 10 recruits all the time. I mean, those guys are going to be good in the NBA. Anthony Davis is going to be good in the NBA. John Wall is going to be good in the NBA because they would have been good in the NBA had they not even gone to college.
Something has to change because what's the positive of going to Virginia if you're a four-star recruit?
Winning games? Yeah, I think you would have to agree that one thing that has to change regardless is the postseason success. And is it directly related? No, but the postseason success will bring in higher recruits, which will result in more NBA players. So is it an issue? Is it a pressing issue right now? You know, Virginia's going to crumble because they lost early in the tournament? No, but they do need having better showings in the years to come so that they don't sort of find themselves getting that reputation. Because once you have that reputation, then it's really tough to get recruits. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, they also played a Final Four team in the second round that they should have never played in the second round. And they didn't have really the one player on their team who could create offense. So, I mean, it's not like this was like a terrible team all year.
They got
into the tournament and lost to, like, you know, Cleveland State, like Wake Forest did when we were at Wake Forest. Like, it's not like that was like the case. Like, they lost to a Final Four team in the second round. Without their second best player, basically.
Right. Yep. That time of year, it just comes down to matchups, as they always say. I want to get your thoughts, both of you, before we close out here, on some of the rule changes that have come down this offseason in college basketball. The 30-second shot clock being the biggest, I guess, most newsworthy one. Bobby, in your mind, from the changes, which will have the biggest impact? Is it that 30 seconds? What's the biggest difference we'll see in 2015-16?
Well, the 30-second one won't help offenses. It's going to help defenses, because the problem is, you know, a good defensive team can run a three-quarter press and then fall back to a man-to-man or a half-court trap, and that's less time for the offense to probe around. I mean, there will be more possessions in theory, but scoring won't change at all. It might be a little uglier as a start to begin with. That's going to benefit good defensive teams. The rule I'm most excited about is that the 10-second clock in the backcourt doesn't reset after a timeout.
Yeah.
So if it's like, eight, 9 seconds in the backcourt, you know, you don't get the fact that the coach can't call a live ball timeout. So if you call the timeout, okay, you have 1 second to throw the ball over the court.
Yeah, yeah. Bev, Bobby used the word ugly, or it could start ugly. Do you think that'll be the case? And if so, do you think it could be a bad thing for college basketball in the immediate sense, starting the season out?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely – it'll take a while to get used to. I definitely agree with Bobby there. I do think it's fixable. I think it's going to make it more entertaining in the long run, if not at first. I think it's honestly going to reward teams that are probably better, you know, team basketball, like teams that really kind of rotate the ball, really kind of can get out in transition and all of that, you know. The rule I really, really, really want to see is being able to advance the ball up to half court under 2 minutes, like in the NBA, but I know that's never going to happen. I just want to throw that in there.
But, yeah, that one would be a tough sell for college basketball coaches, I think. But you never know. I mean, these changes happen pretty swiftly. Well, thank you guys for joining the podcast today. Really appreciate your insight. You can read Bobby and Bev multiple times a week on Today's You and follow them on Twitter. Bobby is at UKLefty22 and Bev is at Andrew_Bev. Thanks, guys, and have a good one.
All right, thanks.
See y'all.